Hello, and welcome to As It Is, the daily podcast, webcast, and broadcast from the Voice of America. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. It's Monday, May 9th, 2016. It was on this day in 1974 that the United States House Committee on the Judiciary opened formal and public impeachment hearings against President Richard Nixon. 3 months later, Nixon resigned.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow. Vice President Ford will be sworn in as president at that hour in this office.
Now, here's what's ahead on today's program. Voters in the Philippines are choosing a new president and vice president today. The leading vice presidential candidate is Ferdinand Marcos Jr., the son of the former dictator. How do Filipinos feel about another Marcos as one of the country's leaders? I'll tell you in a moment. Then, John Russell will tell us about a new documentary film that explores the poor conditions of Australian refugee detention centers on islands in the South Pacific Ocean. Brian Lynn will be here to report on a new robotic American warship that can direct itself as it battles Chinese and Russian Navy submarines. Anna Mateo will tell us how living among trees, plants, and flowers can help women live longer. And finally, in our weekly science report, Ann Ball will tell us what surprised scientists when they explored the area where the Amazon River meets the Atlantic Ocean. So you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. Every day of the year, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And every Monday, we bring you the latest science news. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. In the Philippines, voters will elect a new president today. They will also elect a vice president, the country's second highest position. One of the leading candidates for vice president is the son of former President Ferdinand Marcos. Ferdinand Marcos Jr. is currently a member of the Philippine Senate. His political campaign has called for finding real solutions to the country's problems. During a recent campaign stop, the 57-year-old candidate told a crowd near Manila Bay that he takes the office of vice president very seriously. "We're not just all talk," he said. "It's not just slogans. It's not just destroying and fighting with our opponents." Marcos has also told supporters that he wants to achieve unity, for all to live as one. "This is the only way I see that our people can once again feel their lives are renewed and progressing," he said. His father, the former president, was accused of plundering billions of dollars and violating the human rights of citizens. Ferdinand Marcos Sr. was ousted in a people power rebellion in 1986. At the time, his political opponents accused him of trying to steal an election from another candidate. After several days of protests, the dictator went into exile in the American state of Hawaii, where he died 3 years later. Today, his son, who calls himself Bongbong, is very popular in the Philippines, even if his family's name is linked to a turbulent time. Ferdinand Marcos Jr. has so far been at the top or tied in national opinion surveys. His strongest support has generally come from people who lived under his father's rule. Dennis Pareja is a cargo ship employee and a supporter of the candidate. He said the Oxford-educated Marcos would be a good choice for the country's overseas workers. This is not a like-father-like-son situation, Pareja said. He's different from his father. Bongbong has learned the lessons and will not repeat that. Marcos told reporters at a gathering of workers that no one can change the past. The past is the past, so we are looking to the future. That's what's getting us the support, he said. Marcos was asked whether his family should say it is sorry for alleged abuses committed during his father's rule. He has repeatedly said he would not apologize for things he did not do. Another supporter of Marcos Jr. is Rolly Alvarez, who was 17 years old when the candidate's father declared martial law in 1972. She said life was beautiful back then, and she longs for the days when crime was low. Another supporter, Josh Lim of Manila, said Filipinos need to do research to find the real reasons why the country's wealth collapsed in the 1980s. Many people said that we are number two to Japan during Marcos' time, and, well, it is sad that our history, the Philippine history, was distorted by the yellow people. Yellow propaganda, if you're aware of that. Josh Lim was talking about the Aquino family. Former President Corazon Aquino made a yellow ribbon and yellow-colored clothing a sign of the restoration of democracy in 1986. Bonifacio Ilagan is the head of a movement aimed at preventing Marcos from becoming vice president. Ilagan said he plans to keep campaigning against the candidate. I don't think our country deserves a leader who lies, who keeps stolen money, and who cannot recognize right from wrong. Observers say that while Marcos seems to be leading his six main vice presidential opponents, his levels of support have remained flat for the past 4 months. In recent weeks, Lenny Robredo, the candidate of the Liberal Party, has slowly moved up in the polls, edging past Marcos by 1 or 2 percentage points. A new documentary film about Australia's asylum policy called Chasing Asylum explores the poor conditions at detention centers on islands in the South Pacific Ocean. John Russell is here to tell us about the film.
The media is barred from the camps on the island nation of Nauru and on Manus in Papua New Guinea. But filmmaker Eva Orner said she wanted to find a way to tell the truth about them. It has been said that we are committing torture, that we are breaking all of our obligations under the Refugee Convention, and yet it continues, Orner said. So, I set about to show audiences what it looks like and what their taxpayer dollar is paying for. The movie includes secretly recorded footage from inside the centers. It documents the stories of some detainees. Orner described the conditions at the centers as horrific. We are the only country in the world to detain children indefinitely. Women, men, children are there. Women and children have been sexually abused. Two men have died. Actually, three men have died. On May 1st, a 21-year-old Somali refugee was severely injured when she set herself on fire at the center on Nauru. Orner described making Chasing Asylum as one of the hardest projects of her life. But she said it is important the world knows how Australia is treating detainees in the centers. Orner said she hopes her film will push Australians to demand an end to the camps. Officials from Australia have defended the camps. They say the camps are deterrents to migrants. They say they also save lives because they stop refugees from risky ocean travel. Last month, Papua New Guinea's Supreme Court declared the detention center at Manus Island unconstitutional and illegal. Prime Minister Peter O'Neill said it will close. I'm John Russell.
Thanks, John. The U.S. military has just introduced a warship that can direct itself as it searches for enemy submarines. Brian Lynn now tells us about the American technology that is a major upgrade in robotic warfare against the Chinese and Russian navies.
The 40-meter-long vessel is named Sea Hunter. Sea Hunter does not carry weapons. It is powered by two diesel engines. The ship reaches speeds of 27 knots. It can sail on the ocean's surface for 2 or 3 months without a crew on board to control it. The ship is very efficient. It operates at a fraction of the cost of the Navy's manned ships. This is the first time we've ever had a totally robotic, transoceanic capable ship, said Deputy U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Work. He added that he hoped such ships might be operating in the Western Pacific within 5 years. Sea Hunter arrives during a time of high tension in the Western Pacific and the South China Sea. China is expanding its submarine fleet. U.S. aircraft carriers, submarines, and unmanned warships are critical to America's military power in the Western Pacific. We're not working on anti-submarine technology just because we think it's cool, said Peter Singer, an expert on robotic warfare. We're working on it because we're deeply concerned about the advancements that China and Russia are making. The U.S. military says it hopes Sea Hunter, once it is tested at sea, could head to the U.S. Navy's Japan-based 7th Fleet to continue testing. The ship's projected daily operating cost is less expensive than if it were staffed with a crew. The daily operating cost is $15,000 to $20,000. The Navy said $20 million went into building Sea Hunter. You now have an asset at a fraction of the cost of a manned platform, said Rear Admiral Robert Guerrier, the Navy's Director of Unmanned Warfare Systems. The ship is about to undergo 2 years of testing at sea. Test runs will confirm if Sea Hunter can use radar and cameras to avoid other vessels. The tests include exercises to check that it can follow rules and standards for operating. During the christening ceremony in Portland, Oregon, work raised the possibility of positioning weapons on Sea Hunter. He stressed that even if the United States decided to put weapons on robotic vessels such as Sea Hunter, any decision to use offensive lethal force would be made by humans. There's no reason to be afraid of a ship like this, Work told reporters at the ceremony. I'm Brian Lynn.
Thanks, Brian. Living among trees, plants, and flowers can fill your life with beauty. But Ana Mateo tells us if you're a woman, living around nature could also help you live longer.
Researchers found that women who live in homes surrounded by plants appear to have lower death rates than women who live in areas with less greenery. Researchers at Harvard University's T.H. Chan School of Public Health reported the finding. Peter James is a research associate in the school's Department of Epidemiology. An epidemiologist is an expert in how disease spreads and how it can be controlled. James and his team looked at information from one of the largest and oldest investigations of women's health, the Nurses' Health Study. The Nurses' Health Study began 40 years ago and expanded in 1989. It now has information on nearly 200,000 women. For the new study, the Harvard team looked at the mortality rates of more than 100,000 women between the years 2000 and 2008. Then the researchers compared the mortality rates of these women to the greenery around their homes. To determine the amount of trees and other vegetation, researchers examined satellite images. The researchers considered other risk factors, things such as the age of the women, their economic status, race, and ethnicity. They also looked at whether or not the women smoked. The study found that the mortality rate among women who lived in the greenest spaces was 12% lower than those from the least green areas. Peter James said he and his team were surprised to find such a strong link between high vegetation levels and low mortality rates. He added they were also surprised to find how high levels of plant life can affect a woman's mental health. The study suggests that living among vegetation, trees, flowers, and other plants lowered levels of depression. Researchers say women in greener areas spent more time with other people, exercised more, and were less exposed to air pollution. One of the biggest effects of greenery appeared to be a lowered risk of respiratory disease and cancer. Here are some numbers. The study found that women living in areas with the most greenery had a 34% lower rate of dying from a respiratory disease and a 13% lower rate of dying from cancer. James says that it is common knowledge that vegetation helps the environment in many ways. But, he adds, the new findings suggest ways for city planners, landscape architects, and policymakers to grow even healthier living areas. I'm Anna Mateo.
Thanks, Anna. Now, if it's Monday, it's time for Science in the News with Ann Ball.
Scientists studying the area where the Amazon River meets the Atlantic Ocean were in for a surprise. Under the muddy, dark Amazon River water was a large number of undiscovered reefs with colorful sea fans, coral, plants, fish, and very big sponges. It was one of the biggest surprises in modern ocean science. Most ocean reefs need sunlight to exist. On their boat that day, in 2012, they carried a hand-drawn map that suggested maybe a large set of reefs sat just below them. Brazilian scientist Rodrigo Mora of the Federal University of Rio de Janeiro brought the map. He had read about the possible reefs in a 1977 research paper. He lowered a dredging machine into the muddy water. Oceanographer Patricia Yeager was there too. With others, she leaned over the boat's edge, waiting to see what Mora would bring up from the bottom. They did not expect much.
But we were very excited about the possibility, and of course, he brings up the most amazing animals I have ever seen. At least in this part of the world, they were colorful coral, sponges, fish, brittle stars, all kinds of things I could not have imagined in my wildest dreams lived underneath this river plume.
The team was studying the area where the Amazon River flows into the Atlantic Ocean. Where these waters meet, the world's largest river moves out across the top of the ocean, spreading out like a fan. Yeager teaches oceanography at the University of Georgia in the U.S. She explains that the water from the river stays separate from the ocean as it moves across it, covering the ocean with its dark and muddy water. The reefs sit hidden in the ocean, about 50 meters below the surface of the water, says Yeager.
And so it is not being bathed in the river plume itself. It's far below, in the very salty ocean. So the fresh water is not touching the reefs. They're in salty ocean water.
The reefs run from the French Guiana border to Brazil's Maranhão state, covering about 9,500 square kilometers. Yeager says she was surprised to find coral reefs below the dark, muddy water.
You can't look down and see them the way you can other reefs. They're quite deep. And then on top of that, the water, the surface layer of the water is very dark and turbid. So yeah, you can't see them from the surface. That's why we didn't know they were there.
She says that she was taught that coral needs sunlight to survive. And yet, here were coral in the low light of this area, and they were just fine. Some of the reefs do get sunlight for part of the year. She says in the areas that get less light, the living creatures are less dependent on photosynthesis. Some of the coral reefs stand 30 meters high. They are home to lobster, red snapper fish, and very big sponges. But the area does not have as many different kinds of animals as some of the other well-known reefs around the world, like Australia's Great Barrier Reef. On their trip in 2012, the team only had a short time to find and explore their surprising discovery. The Brazilian scientists went back to the reefs in 2014 to do more studies of the reefs. Recently, they published their findings in the journal Science. Yeager says they plan to keep studying the area. One day, they would like to use submersibles, vehicles used underwater, to explore the reefs.
It'd be really nice to not have to dredge this system to understand it, because, of course, that's a very destructive method. I would rather go down with cameras and and look at it instead of destroying it.
She says discovering these reefs is an example of how little is known about the oceans and how important exploration is. We need to be open to discoveries, she says. News about the reefs comes when there is more bad news about the problems of coral bleaching in Australia's Great Barrier Reef. Scientists warn the bleaching is due to warming waters, and it is very damaging to the coral. Yeager says it might help to study how these Amazon reefs survive with less sunlight. Maybe, she says, scientists can find ways to help the other reefs suffering around the world. But the Amazon reefs face their own threats. Companies want to drill for oil near the reefs. If they go forward, Yeager warns, those large-scale operations could damage the reefs. I'm Ann Ball.
Thanks, Ann. Well, that's As It Is Monday. We hope it has informed and entertained you, and has helped you learn everyday American English. You can read and listen to all of the stories that you have just heard on this program at our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. That's learningenglish.voanews.com. Also at our website, you will find podcasts, captioned videos, and lessons to test your English skills. You can also send us a message through our website. Just click Contact Us. You can also send us an email directly. Our address is learningenglish@voanews.com. That's learningenglish@voanews.com. And please know this, we do read every message you send us. You can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, iTunes, Twitter, and on our YouTube channel, all at VOA Learning English. And be sure to listen to VOA World News at the beginning of every hour, Universal Time, every hour of every day of the year. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. Jonathan Evans will be back tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with As It Is Tuesday. I hope you'll join him then for that Learning English broadcast, webcast, and podcast from the Voice of America.